We're talking with Nikki Giovanni, who's coming to Knoxville and will be speaking at the Bijou Theater on Thursday, April the 5th at 7 p.m. It's actually sold out, but you can get on the waiting list by visiting the website. She'll be giving a talk as part of the Wilma Dykman Stokely Memorial Lecture. How do you feel about that?
Oh, well, I'm thrilled to be coming back to Knoxville. I was born in Knoxville, and I was actually the first person in my family to be born in a hospital. Everybody else had been born at home. So my sister used to tease me when we were having fights. She would say, you know, we made a mistake. You know, when we picked you up at the hospital, we made a mistake. And it used to upset me so much. I was like, oh, I wonder if she really did. But, of course, no, I'm kin to them. And we of course, lived there on Mulvaney Avenue, which is now
Hall of Fame Drive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm glad to be coming back. And, of course, I remember the Bijou, and I remember the Tennessee, because they were, of course, the Tennessee was totally segregated, and the Bijou you could go to the Bijou, you had to buy your ticket in the front, and then you had to walk around in the back and walk up the steps. So there's been progress made, so I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, well, you've come a long way in that regards, not being able to get in and then being featured. Did you think, you know, when you were growing up that you would see all these changes that you've seen? And are you disappointed about other changes that you haven't seen?
I like Knoxville. And so I think that some of the things that we've seen in the United States has been good. And as a civilized human being, I'm very disappointed with what we have for the president, because I think he's mean. And I think that he's not taking the nation where it should go. But other than that, yeah. I'm a space freak, and as I've grown older, and I recommend old age for sure, I really love space. And one of the things that we know is that we live in space, which is something that we in the United States forget. We always say space as if there's outer space and inner space, but Earth is in space. And I think it's just really time that we started to tell our children, and in my case, grandchildren, and I doubt that I'll see it, but great-grandchildren, that we are Earthlings. And it's time to move away from that whole concept of race and religion, because everybody, whatever you worship, that's good for you, and you should be allowed to do it. And we shouldn't be killing you because we don't agree with you about it. So there's just some things you wonder, well, we need to make some changes, because, you know, this is 2018. It's time to make some changes. You know, it really is. And to get along better with each other.
Your new book is called A Good Cry, What We Learn from Tears and Laughter. Did you have that title before you wrote the book, or did it come later?
Actually, A Good Cry came later, because I started to call that book, I was thinking about calling that book Surveillance. Because one of the things I did when I was a kid, I always watched. I watched everything. You know, I was a kid that was always sitting in the corner. You know how you always have those children that are doing that. And I was a kid sitting in the corner. And I almost called it Surveillance. And as the book evolved, I realized that what we were doing is we're dealing with, my doctor and I, by the way, argued about it, but we were dealing with whether or not people should cry. And, of course, crying is good for you. My doctor and I argue about it, and I'll probably mention that because Gregory says that, you know, the reason that I have high blood pressure. And Gregory says the reason I have high blood pressure is that, you know, I eat too much salt. And I say the reason that I have high blood pressure is that I never learned to cry. And so that's how we ended up with dealing with what we learned from – I did not – that's not my title, by the way. My title was A Good Cry. And my editor added what we learned from tears and laughter. And I think that, again, she added the right thing. I think she recognized both parts of it.
It's a really great book, and it resonates on so many different levels. For me, one of the things it seems like that's learned from tears and laughter is gratitude. And you take a lot of opportunities to show gratitude for a lot of different people.
Well, you realize, and you don't think about it when you're young, or at least I didn't, what people did to help make your life so much better. And of course, I live with my grandparents. My parents had some difficulties, and finally, I just realized I couldn't be bothered with their fighting every weekend and stuff. And I went to visit grandmother, and I did that because my godmother, Baby West, and I wrote a poem for Baby West. Baby West died and left me $50, which doesn't sound like a lot of money, but in those days, $50 was a lot of money because you could go to Knoxville. The family, my mother and father at that point lived in Cincinnati, and you could go to Knoxville for $10.50. So it was kind of wonderful, and I was able to go to Knoxville. And as I was there, I asked grandmother, you know, can I stay? And she must have known more than I thought she knew anyway. But she said yes, and so I stayed with grandmother, which was really wonderful. And then you realize, well, grandpapa taught at it was Vine School then. Vine became Vine Junior, as you know. And it was grandpapa was retired. And you don't really think about, oh, my goodness, having another mouth to feed is a big deal because grandmother never worked. She every now and then she would cook because she was a terrific cook, and she would cook for white Tennesseans there. But for the most part, grandmother didn't work, and so having another mouth to feed is going to be some money. Some money is going to, and you don't think about that, and so you don't think, oh, these people put themselves out for me. They loved me, and so that's what I was trying to deal with in the book, just dealing with the people that you. Who loved you and who embraced you and who recognized what you learned from tears and laughter.
What do you think the greatest thing your grandparents taught you was?
I think that the greatest thing that grandmother taught me, of course, was, well, grandpapa too probably, was patience. I am very patient.
In your book, I've got my favorite poems, and we'll talk about a couple of those in a second. Do you have favorite essays or poems in your new book?
Well, I would never. I've learned. I've been, you know, doing this for 50 years. This is my life, and I never ever say what my favorites are because it gets you into a discussion. Then somebody will say, "Well, I really liked," and next thing you know, you're arguing against one of your own poems. So I never do that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. My favorite one is the one called "We Two." It's, I've read it several times, and I get a little something different from each time I read it. Do you remember where you were when you wrote that or what place you were at?
Not offhand, actually. I don't, to tell you the truth. But I'll tell you a story. I was saying earlier, I'm a space freak, and I've been saying to Dr. Bolden, who runs NASA, that we need to get more artists in space. And he and I have been back and forth. Well, what would you do if you were going to go? I can't go into space because I'm in bad health. But we were laughing about that. He said, well, what would you do if you went? I said, well, the first thing you'd have, of course, is wine. I mean, everybody knows that you can't, you just can't go into space without having some wonderful red wine. And so we agree with that. We don't know how we would do it because we know we can't take it in glass because glass is too heavy. But that's something that somebody else has to figure out. But the other thing is, well, what books would we take? What would we take to entertain ourselves with? And I'm saying always, well, we obviously would take poetry for exactly the reason you just said. Because if we were going, for example, into Saturn, Saturn is a 20-year journey. So if right now we sent a 16-year-old and said, okay, would you like to go? What we would give him or her, and I think it should be her, by the way, what we would give her is a book of poetry, or we would not give her a book, but we would put together a book of poetry, because you can read poetry all the time. You can read it again and again, and you're going to get something different and something wonderful out of it every time. And, of course, all of my friends who write novels, and I have many of those, who said, no, I think you should take a couple of good novels. Now, you just say that because you write novels. But nobody's going to read a, you know, 1,000-word novel, you know. But you can read a poem, and you get something out of it. And then you read it, you know, a year later, and you get something else out of it. And so poetry is absolutely perfect for space.
Where did you get your interest in space? When did that develop?
My sister and I shared a bedroom. And I had the side of the bedroom that looked out into the stars. I think I just fell in love with the stars, but who doesn't? I mean, there's just, how can you not fall in love with the stars?
Indeed. Did you ever have a chance to meet Sun Ra, the jazz musician, by any chance?
No, unfortunately, I did not. But I did have an opportunity, which I'm very pleased with, to take the old SST, the Concord. And so that was lucky, and I'm so sorry that we no longer have the Concord, because when I took the Concord, of course, you can see the curve of the earth. And I was just so lucky to have been able to be on that I was about to say ship, but it really was a rocket, wasn't it? I was just so lucky to have been able to take that.
Another one of my favorite poems in your new book is called "I Married My Mother," and that's one of that's one of those when you see the title, you know you're going to skip to that one first. You know, when you look, and that's what I did. I went to it first, and maybe that's one of the heaviest poems in the whole collection.
Oh, thank you. I love that poem, and that one I can tell you. I did. I used to tease Mommy about that, because when my father finally, my father died, and I was living with Mommy because Mommy needed, you have someone who's ill. My father had a stroke, and, you know, it was clear that he was going to pass, which he did. But it was clear also that Mommy should have somebody there with her. It's very hard to be alone and your spouse that you've been with for all of these years. And I used to tease Mommy, and I said, you know, you should have married me, and we'd still be together. And then she would say, well, if I married you, you know, we couldn't have, how would we have gotten you? And I said, well, we'd have to figure out, you know, how human beings, how we can have human female. We have to learn how to lay an egg so that we could do that. And we laughed. I would have married my mother because we got along, because I loved her so much, and I think that she loved me. So it was a good relationship. And what you're always looking for is, I think, and that's one of the things that I do, and I'm not arguing against any other poem, but I do love about that poem. One of the things that I do love about it is that we're always looking for someone who loves us as our mothers did.
When you write a poem like that one and it's finished, do you feel like it's always finished, or you ever want to go back and go, gosh, I thought of something else I'd like to add to it? Or
I don't know. Right now, no. But if I think of something that I should say in that vein, because I'm a big fan of love, and I think love is one of the good things, I'll try to write another poem. No, I won't. If I can't let it go, then I shouldn't do that. You write the poem that you wrote, and if it doesn't work, then you, I write on a computer, by the way, though I'm probably the only person on earth who does not know how to email, or what is that other thing, Facebook, or I don't know how to do that, but I do write on a computer. And if the poem isn't working, then you just hit delete.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you like being a professor? How do you like teaching? I mean, you seem always to me a writer at your core, and now you have this other life too as a professor. How is that?
Well, I think that it's really, I can't imagine people not writing, you know, not teaching, because it helps me to have a routine, and that's important. And now, of course, I'm teaching people. My granddaughter's 12 years old, and I'm teaching people who are, you know, 19, so you can see where that is. It keeps me aware of things, and I think that's important. And I think it just helps me to be, it keeps you, for lack of a better word, I enjoy being old. I think being 74 is a good idea. But having the ability to go into the classroom keeps me young. It keeps me involved with what's going on. And I think that's good, because the kids, my kids right now are worried about me because I've been sick. And so they won't, they are funny. We don't have class. I have one student who brings me a muffin, and I have another student who brings me Boost, B-O-O-S-T. I don't know if you know Boost. And they won't do class. The whole class will just sit there and look at me until I eat my muffin and drink my Boost, because they said, well, you have to stay well. You know, that's what you have to do, and they won't do anything until I do that. And that kind of love is significant. It just is significant.
It is, and there's a really beautiful poem about the snow, the student that brings you the coffee in the snow.
Yes, she did, and again, there are just some things I would have missed that. I would have missed that if I didn't teach. And it wasn't that I missed the coffee, because, hell, I can make coffee. It's that you miss the involvement.
Is that one of the reasons you come back to Knoxville?
I come back to Knoxville when I'm asked because there's so many people in Knoxville that I love, and I'm so sorry. My good friend and wonderful person, Avon Rollins, your former mayor, and Avon and I were in school together. And Knoxville is home. I was born in Knoxville. So I wrote a poem for Knoxville, and it has been repeated several times there. It's been illustrated in several books, and I'm glad because Knoxville, I mean, it's home.
Well, let me just say that we're very excited that you're coming home.
I'm very excited to be coming home. I do come back. It's only, I think, Knoxville is, 6 hours, something like that. It's not a very long trip. I'm not being allowed to drive because I had a bit of a seizure. So a friend of mine is coming over with me. She's going to drive me over. So I'm just looking forward to seeing Knoxville because every time it's home. So every time you see home, it's a poem. So every time you see it, you see something different.
Well, I can't wait to see what you see this time, and we look.
Thank you.
We look forward to having you at the Bijou, Nikki Giovanni. Oh,
thank you very much. I'm looking forward to coming.
Nikki Giovanni, our guest on Changing Course, a production of WUOT. I'm Todd Steed.